Inside the Cross Podcast.
And from Wall Street to Orange County, we are back on the MCLA Inside the Cross Podcast. As always, a very exciting show. We are knee-deep into the postseason. Bracketology themes. Bids have been awarded already. Guys on the bubble are starting to bite their nails. There are some teams that are not in control of their own destiny and some teams that are fighting for that very, very coveted AQ. A lot of stuff to discuss, a lot of projections to make, and in a few short weeks, we will be in Orange County, California, to crown two new MCLA champions. Prospectively, Colorado State and St. Thomas have certainly made a habit of winning championships, and they will certainly be in Orange County, but the recent results show, and the tide seems to dictate that we might have some new champions in the MCLA this year. And with that, we welcome in our guest for this week, a head coach of a team that has punched its ticket to Orange County, was last in the tournament as a 16 seed in 2012, and almost pulled a huge upset over Cal Poly. That year, Sam Lippman was an assistant coach for Minnesota Duluth under Frank Clark. When Coach Clark left for a new opportunity, Sam was first in line and rightfully awarded the new head coaching job, and very excited to have him on the podcast for the first time. Coach Lippman, thank you so much for your time this evening.
Thanks for having me.
So Coach Lippman, you know, let's get right into it. You know, you missed out on the tournament last year because the UMLC was missing an automatic qualifier in Division One. You won the conference. Hey, if Oregon State doesn't upset Oregon in the PNCLL championship, you're probably in the tournament. And I guess that's one of the more annoying parts of not controlling your own destiny. But you get the matchup you want. You get the rivalry game you want. You played the Gophers in the UMLC championship game. And now you've made the tournament as a player. You've made the tournament as an assistant coach. And for the first time as a head coach, you're taking the Bulldogs to the MCLA national championships. How does it feel?
It's great to be back. You know, it's last year was, you know, a little heartbreaking not being there, having spent 7 years in a row and 11 of my 12 with the program, and to get this group of guys back there, we're just excited.
Absolutely. And, you know, we talk about that overtime loss that you suffered in 2012. I was actually the color analyst for that game. I talked to you on the sidelines before the game, had a chance to speak to you after. And, you know, I could have predicted, I thought that upset was a very good possibility. I thought you matched up very well with Cal Poly. It was an unbelievable back and forth game, two conflicting styles. Cal Poly, run and gun, speed, finesse, UMD, blue collar, aggressive, in between the lines lacrosse. And, you know, unfortunately, it fell in overtime. Matt Groutman for the Mustangs scored the game-winning goal. With all that being said, you know, you beat Cal Poly in the regular season last year and got some revenge back. But as far as, you know, national tournament experience is concerned, do you feel like you and your team still have a sour taste in your mouth that you really want to redeem this year in California?
You know, I don't think it's as much about redemption. We've got a really different team than we had back then. You know, these guys, I've got a good, strong, real strong group of seniors and my three senior captains. They just want to go out on top. And they're pushing the guys along with me and the rest of the staff to get us back there as we've done now. And now it's time to go to work. You know, we're ready for whatever opponent's in front of us.
Absolutely. And when you think back to 2012, I know it's, you know, long past your radar. I mean, it was really a great game. I would say probably one of the best games of the tournament. You know, what's the biggest takeaway that you take from that game? Do you feel as though there are residual themes that you've taken through 2013 and 2014 and say, hey, you know, that Cal Poly win was heartbreaking. We got to do X, Y, and Z in order to finish and execute better.
You know what? Yeah, I think a big part of it is that left us with some confidence. 2012, we had a pretty difficult schedule and went on a five game run where what was set up to be you know, a couple top 10s, a couple top 15s, and a couple top 20s ends up being basically the one through, you know, 1, 4, 5, and 7 and 8. We took our bumps that season, but getting to that tournament and knowing that we had an opportunity to play Cal Poly again gave us that confidence, and then being able to leave that game and saying, all right, we can play with anybody. We can play with the number one team in the country. That's helped. That's, you know, we've carried that on as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, let's take things back to a more recent game. that you probably have a lot stronger recollection of. The UMLC championship game, you played your conference rivals in the Minnesota Golden Gophers. The weather was poor. It's from what I heard about the game, you kind of dominated the first half, and then the second half was essentially a defensive stalemate. What's your biggest takeaway from the title game, and what adjustments do you take away from that victory into Orange County in order to be successful?
You know, I think it was our first time defensively that we played all around 60 minutes of lacrosse. We did a nice job of staying out of the penalty box, which we've been working towards all year long. And I feel offensively in the first half, we didn't let anything affect us. You know, it was a horrible weather game, but we played some of the best offense and had some of the best ball control we've had all year. In the second half, Matt Jorgensen, the goalie for the U of M, played very, very well. Their defense made some adjustments to our offense and slowed us down a little bit. But you know, at the same point, we continued to grind. We continued to win the battles, and I think even possession time and we may have been outshot in the second half, but possession time we definitely held the card there, which was important for us.
For sure. And coming off of that note, you know, what is your perception of the rivalry in Minnesota? You know, this is a program that, you know, only kind of recently, maybe in like the last 5 to 7 years, really became to be pertinent in the MCLA. In your playing days, there were probably more formidable opponents in the Upper Midwest Lacrosse League that you battled against. It's no secret that they are among the few that are the next in line to maybe make that big jump from the MCLA to the NCAA. The Big Ten infrastructure is going to be there, and you know firsthand from being in the state, the state representation for lacrosse is strong. The Swarm are doing well. You know, there's a lot of buzz around your program in Minnesota. What do you think at this juncture of your program's development and the Gophers' development makes the rivalry so special? And you know, I'll ask you a follow-up question right after that.
Well, don't quote me on this, but I believe
It's hard not to quote you. You're on the
I think it's like 13 out of 15 UMLC championship games. 13 of the last 15 have been between the Gophers and UMD. So right there, that rivalry has just been ingrained. You know, I do believe it's a matter of time. Norwood Teague, the AD at the U of M, doesn't say much about it or says that no, they're not going Division One anytime soon. There's no plans because of funding and such. But I think it would be wonderful. I would hate to lose that rivalry. You know, that's been we grew up as Bulldogs and learned to dislike the Gophers, just as the Gophers, whether it's hockey, whether it's, you know, lacrosse, it's that rivalry is there. You know, we're the stepchild school, the smaller school up north of the
Sure.
university system, but I'd hate to see that program. I mean, I'd love to see it go Division One for the state of Minnesota, for the university, but I would hate to lose that within UMLC as well.
No question. You know, that being said, we did interview Coach Limpert a few weeks ago. And when we talked to him about the development of lacrosse in Minnesota and the jump that the Gophers might make, whether it's 3, 5, 10 years down the road, you know, something that he harped on for the good of Minnesota lacrosse is that, you know, if the Gophers do make that move, in some way, shape, or form, Duluth has to be ready to follow as well. Obviously, the conference issue is a question mark, but you know, how do you respond to that in Coach Limbert's opinion in regards to if Minnesota is able to pull the trigger and go Division One soon, how Duluth's lacrosse support might follow intrinsically with that?
Well, obviously they're the same university system, so they're probably both looking at it. But you know, I'd love for it to happen. I think it would be great. But again, facilities are a huge issue at UMD. We don't have a bubble. We don't have that opportunity, along with obviously funding and where the university's at. You know, the University of Minnesota system's cutting things. They're not adding things. So you know, unless these Big Ten network contracts keep paying off big and that if the money goes back towards something, you know, we got to find the way, you know.
Yeah, no question. TV, you know, it's an interesting point you make. TV obviously plays a huge role in generating revenue, especially for non-revenue generating sports from a ticket sales perspective. And you know, the Big Ten schools and the Midwestern Powers that be do benefit a lot from the existence of the Big Ten Network. It's affiliated with Fox and Fox Sports. We know that Rupert Murdoch has very deep pockets, and the Big Ten Network has certainly invested into putting more lacrosse on the air. And I would have to agree with you. In order for lacrosse to grow in that region, and especially for a school in the University of Minnesota system, the Big Ten Network really has to be prepared to supplement those finances, no question about it. And going on to a different path, let's actually talk about facilities for a little bit. You're actually waking up in just a few hours to head to practice at 6 a.m. early in the season. You do play most of your home games at a neutral site in Minneapolis. Under a dome bubble. Chris Malone actually spoke very, very highly of that last year and able to come to Minnesota and get games in against you and Cal Poly in a controlled weather surface. Obviously, there's not much that you could do about adding facilities from your seat, but to have access to a bubble off campus, to have to play most of your games indoors, what are your thoughts on it? Do you enjoy it? Do you feel as though it prepares you better to have a controlled surface? Do you wish that, El Nino would play a factor and you got to get outside more? What is your general opinion on that?
I'd love the opportunity to be in a dome all the time. If we had one in Duluth, it would change the landscape of our program immediately. We never want to make excuses, but we practice on a rubber court that's half field until we can get outside to practice. Some years we're outside at the end of February, but the last 2 years we've been lucky. I think we had three or four practices outside before the UMLC tournament. We're gonna have we were indoors today. And indoors on Tuesday, and tomorrow looks like the rain and snow is gonna break for us enough to get outside for a bit, and looks like next week's gonna be great weather for some outdoor practices. It would be wonderful for the university and for the community up here if we had a place we could play up here. Lacrosse is growing not only throughout the state of Minnesota, but quickly catching on up in the northeastern portion of the state as well. And the more they can watch good quality lacrosse from our program and other programs coming in, the more the kids are going to want to play, and the more it's going to spread.
No, and no shame in saying you wish you have access to a bubble. Let's not, tiptoe around the fact that that hasn't been a pertinent element of success for teams past. Michigan played most of their games in Oosterbond Fieldhouse when they were an MCLA team. I'll tell you firsthand right now, the University of Pittsburgh program loves playing in their Coors Indoor Center. They feel as though that they get to prepare, and they know the bells and whistles of that facility. It also makes for a great fan atmosphere. It gets loud in there, so. And even in Division I, Notre Dame, Penn State, they play a lot of their early games in the indoors, and people tend to enjoy it. So certainly no shame in saying that. Sam, let's talk about something we're actually talking off the air just a little bit. One of the reasons that the UMLC did not have an automatic qualifier last year is because you didn't have a sixth team, and you were able to successfully get the University of Wisconsin to go from the GRLC to the UMLC. As a matter of fact, we spoke about that on the phone in between the end of the postseason and last year's MCLA tournament when you and I were just generally catching up, how you felt as though that Wisconsin belonged in your conference for a number of reasons. And they are there, and they did get you the AQ back this year. But it just seems not only it's hardly even a secret. It seems to be very visual out there on social media. People are talking about it. The University of Wisconsin still has two, maybe even three lacrosse teams, and they're not necessarily one of those old school MCLA teams. They came into this rather recently. They competed in the GLLL for a long time, which really, as far as organized club lacrosse is concerned, is probably the most obscure leagues of those that exist. And Wisconsin does have a team in the UMLC and the MCLA, and arguably they're not the most competitive team on campus. A lot of the players tend to, skew more toward the GLLL team and just playing club ball and not having the pressure of the commitment. You haven't gotten much out of that program as far as an answer. as to why that's happening. But you put yourself in Ken Lovick's shoes. You're an old school MCLA guy. I guess there's not necessarily anything wrong with MCLA teams having a club team if they're really that competitive, but it should be the best, most competitive players to be playing on the MCLA team. What is your overall perspective of on this situation, both for the legitimacy of the MCLA, the legitimacy of the UMLC, and if you were in Ken Lovick's shoes, how would you address this issue?
You know, we played Wisconsin last year for the first time in an out-of-conference game, and they were quite competitive. They had some players, quite a few players that could play both at the next level, but were great MCLA players as well. I don't know what happened, but I know that I've heard many of those players have left and, as you said, gone to play for the JLL team. It's got to be frustrating for that program because I don't believe it's the MCLA program's fault. I do think that, money, the travel, the spending, and et cetera, may play some sort of role in that. I'm speculating, but to play in the GLL, the Madison's GLL team hosts most of their games, so their travel's minimum. They don't have, meals on the road, buses, hotels, et cetera. They host the league tournament there. From what I know, the GLL president is Madison's head coach. Madison's GLL team's head coach. We were looking forward to, we went down to Madison for a fall ball tournament this year, which was brought on by the GLL team, but we were told Madison's team was going to be there and many other MCLA teams. Unfortunately, something happened between those two programs and Madison's MCLA team wasn't there, and some of the MCLA teams that were going to be there weren't there as well.
It's an interesting dynamic. It's easy to empathize with. The themes that revolve around virtual varsity lacrosse for most of us, it's a pay to play opportunity, and finances from dues to travel, it all comes into play. But from everything that you just said, I think that MCLA administration, Ken Lovick, Rob Graff really have to have a discussion with the University of Wisconsin and figure out some sort of a way for their club sports department or whoever kinds of facilitates those sorts of budget to make the MCLA product the most attractive product, and then for the GLL team to be a JV team, an unaffiliated club team, whatever. Because as it stands right now, I think that if this continues to happen, it could ha start happening in other schools, and it could end up being a black eye for the MCLA. And I don't think that people like you and me really want to see that black eye get any darker. In fact, we want it to heal. At any respect, let's talk more about a little bit of personnel. Going back to 2012, your goalie that year, Joe Slattery, I would say that he was the best goalie in the entire tournament. Dylan Westfall from Arizona State really didn't play his best, and man, I loved watching him. He made so many great saves against that Cal Poly powerhouse offense. It was exciting, and for that matter, pretty disheartening to see him unfortunately give up that last goal to Mac Rautman. But Joe was a senior that year. You have a new guy in between the net and are fortunate to have a backup who's able to get experience when things are in control. Are there anything that translates well from Joe's skill set to the guys that you have now? Did Joel mentor those guys at all? You're a former goalie yourself. You must take a lot of pride in this. What do you think are the main differences, and for that matter, the same similarities that exist between Joel Slattery and the guys that you have in your goaltending depth chart right now in Duluth?
You know, Joe had a work ethic that was unparalleled, and both Andrew Blazer and Jared Klapprich came in when he was a senior, and Joe took those guys under their wing along with my help and my coaching, and really transformed and made sure that those guys knew what it takes to be a great goaltender for this program and within this league. Both Andy and Jared work their tails off. While the guys are doing their footwork and D work, those guys are running ladders and wall sitting and working on their arcs and working on anything and everything that they can. That was stuff that Joey taught them how to do, and made sure once he left. So it's good. Little different styles of play. Joe was definitely a gamer. He played his best when he put his jersey on. In practice, you know, he was a great leader and led that defense like no other. But he got a completely different focus when he got to a game, and that was you know, that focus he taught to those, to both Andy and Jared as well. You know, I'm blessed. I've had great goaltending at this university since I've coached here, and had a great opportunity to coach multiple all first team All-Americans, second team All-Americans, etc. I hope to do the same with these guys.
There's no debate there. I think that if you know, you could talk about what makes different teams great. You know, Cal Poly's offense, Arizona State's midfield play, the very balanced team that UCSB seems to put together every year. I would say that the cornerstone of Duluth lacrosse, as long as I've been a player, a member of the media, has been goaltending. And it was great to see Joe do his thing in 2012, and I'm excited to see the product in between the pipes for you this year. So, you know, looking forward to California, you know, it seems as though just by really the strength of schedule that comes in with your regular conference, both the GRL in Division One, I think it translates in both Division One and in Division Two as far as the GRLC is concerned. The UMLC, even despite not having the automatic bid this year, is really, you know, one of the top two conferences in Division Two. But from a Division One perspective, you have your ticket punched. What kind of seed do you think that you're looking at? Do you realistically think you're sitting at a 16 and might have to play Arizona State or one of the two Colorado teams? Or do you think that you've earned your way closer to a 13-14 spot to perhaps play somebody within your region, like a Michigan State or even, you know, a team that matches up very similarly to you from a blue-collar perspective like Boston College?
You know, hopefully we're not the 16 since we, you know, played both Purdue and Indiana from the GRLC this year and had success there in both of those games. I'd say somewhere in the 14-15. I'd love to be higher. Unfortunately, we didn't take care of business out of conference and let a couple games get away from us that we shouldn't have. And we've put ourselves at that position at this point.
Sure. So your fate is sealed, as we discussed. Let's talk about Indiana University. I think that one of the coolest things coming out of the GRLC is, for better or worse, is a lot of parity. It seems like, you know, that conference is up for grabs every year. Purdue punched their ticket for the first time last year and certainly had their hands full with Colorado State in the first round. But Indiana's a program that's gone through a lot of transitions. They were pretty good last year, but, you know, they were a very abrasive team. Even though Pete Nelson was part of their coaching staff, the head coach really seemed to ruffle a lot of feathers and made it very easy for certain people to really root against that program. But Pete Nelson was able to take over the program, and, you know, people really look at the Hoosiers in a much different light right now. This is a guy who has a ton of respect for where he came from, his roots, his alma mater, having played under you at a certain point in his career, even went out of his way to make sure that you were on Indiana's schedule this year. And, you know, they are favored to win the GRLC this year and join you in Orange County. Now that your ticket is, your fate is sealed and you know that you're going, are you a bit of an Indiana fan right now? Do you want to see your former pupil, Pete Nelson, take this Hoosiers program to the tournament in the first time and, you know, share a handshake with him in California?
I'd love that. Yeah. And, you know, I wish Pete all the luck. Pete and I talk weekly, if not more at times. And we've kept a great relationship, both as now coaches, but as a player coach, you know, throughout the years as well. Yeah, I would love to see Indiana get that opportunity to get themselves out to Orange County.
And for that matter, you know, the most interesting thing about the way that Pete Nelson runs that program is not the elements of class and the way that he kept the talent level up and really just developed things more and kept the eye on the prize. But, you know, let's not tiptoe around the fact that he's the head hockey coach at the club team at Indiana also. I mean, I spoke to him about this over the summer, how he was planning to balance it. He kind of just said he was going to figure out as he went. You know, what about his personality and what you know of him from that, you know, pupil teacher perspective when you coached him that makes it possible for him to balance those roles?
You know, he was a leader for us. He was a captain as a sophomore. the only sophomore in our program's history, I believe, to be captain and to be captain for 3 years. He's got great leadership abilities, and I don't think it even phases him running both of those programs and doing a great job with both of them.
No question. I think that it's great. I think there's a lot of parallels between the ACHA and the MCLA, especially. I mean, listen, there are a lot of teams in the ACHA that, of course, are just general club teams to supplement NCAA varsity programs. But in certain cases, especially in Bloomington, Indiana, they run that hockey team the same way that most MCLA programs are run. It's virtual varsity. It is the hockey team on campus. And he really does an outstanding job. And he was the head hockey coach last year. And then, you know, when Pete Tumas left, he fell into the head coaching role at lacrosse. And it really is impressive. And I hope I really, you know, from being a bit of an old school MCLA guy myself, I personally enjoy seeing those pupil-teacher relationships develop. I loved it when I saw Doug Carl and Oregon's coach Phil Keebler share a handshake in a conversation last year. Even Dallas Hartley from Chapman is a Sonoma alum. So a triangle of coaches all convening at the MCLA tournament. So I really hope that I have the opportunity to see that develop between the relationship that exists between Duluth and Indiana. Finally, just switching gears to wrap things up, you made it to Greenville in 2012, and I can assure you the Greenville venue and the buzz around the tournament in 2012 was honestly better than 2013. I'll tell you, Sam, you really didn't miss much. As far as the change of location, people are very excited about California, but you enjoyed a decent experience in South Carolina that first year. What do you think are going to be the pros and cons of, or if there are any cons, of making this switch and having this tournament on the Pacific Coast?
Well, you know, cost is obviously the con for us as a northern team. Traveling all the way to Southern California is not cheap for us to do. I think the pros are, you know, your weather. You typically have much more controlled weather in Southern California. You kind of know what you're going to get at this time of year. Not too hot, not too cool. Hopefully not too much rain. It's by the sounds of it, it sounds like UC Irvine's facilities are great. Had the opportunity to play or to coach at Ernie Chapman Stadium. It's a beautiful facility in itself. I think it's a perfect sized facility for the event that is being ran there. I think it'll give it a more intimate feel than some of the bigger empty stadiums. And I know that California is crazy about lacrosse. They draw, it doesn't matter what game, any game I've ever been a part of out there gets a large amount of fans, no matter where you are. And I think that's a positive. I think hopefully they've done a good job with the local communities and getting to get a lot of the youth and such out to display what the MCLA has to show, and it'll be a great event.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I always hear great things about the events in California. Obviously, I feel like the LXM Pro Tour has a lot to do with that. Whittier gets a great draw. Chapman gets a great draw for most of their games. The youth development out there is fantastic. Obviously, you know, a big loss that the MCLA will be suffering is that Chris Malone will be leaving Arizona State to take that position with 3D in Los Angeles. And, you know, obviously that wouldn't be happening if there wasn't a market and a need for him to do that. So I agree that from a community perspective, that'll be great. And the stadium, too. When that same conversation in which you and I were talking at the end of the regional postseason last year, we've talked about venues before, even for the NCAA championships. It's great that they play in those big football stadiums, but you and I were joking last year, you could go up to the top level and run laps if you want to. And I think that this is an issue that the MCLA has been struggling with as well. Both Pizza Hut Park, Dallas Cowboys Stadium in Irving, Dick's Sporting Goods Park in Denver. I think that the MLS soccer stadium is a good thing to aspire to, but there's just always a lot of empty seats. And ultimately, playing in a small college-sized football or soccer facility, I think will be great. As we said, Chapman gets a great draw and fills that stadium for most of their home games. So when they're potentially competing for a national championship with other West Coast teams, I think it'll be great, and I'm excited to see it unfold. So, Coach, before we let you go, get into bed with your old lady and warm up for practice tomorrow. You know, we've talked about some of the defining aspects of Minnesota Duluth lacrosse, you know, playing hard between the lines, being aggressive, ground ball play, blue collar. But you've seen a lot of different phases of Duluth lacrosse from being a player and assistant coach as a head coach. Right now in 2014, what do you think is the most defining characteristic of UMD Bulldog lacrosse?
You know, I'd say there's two the defining characteristics, and they're, I guess they're kind of qualities that we try to instill in the players as well. One is leave the program better than you found it, and I think that's one that this senior group is really trying hard to do. We're playing better lacrosse, there's no doubt about it, and as well as they're trying to mend and take and create a better social setting for all the players at the school as well. And number two is how hard are you going to work when no one's watching? That's kind of been the defining characteristic of individual players throughout this program's history. But I feel like we're getting to that past that tipping point, and we've got a high percentage of our players that are making sure that everyone else is doing the work as well as themselves, whether it's in the weight room, in the classroom, hitting the wall, getting the extra runs in, etc., so that they're ready to go.
Sam, absolutely great having you on the podcast tonight. Congratulations on getting back to the tournament. This will be your first tournament as a head coach. Again, a very loyal and dedicated MCLA old schooler who's seen so many different phases of the program. Very proud to be bringing the Bulldogs to the national championship as a first time in your second year as a head coach. I think that, when I heard that Frank was leaving, I was thinking in my head, I was like, if Sammy doesn't get that job, then, something's wrong in Duluth. Something stinks in Duluth. And I didn't have to sniff out anything because, sure enough, it wasn't very long until you were named the head coach. And obviously, you're doing a great job. You missed out by not having control of your own destiny last year. Really took care of business this year. It's very admirable. Looking forward to seeing you and your boys down in Duluth. The last time I saw down in Orange County, the last time you guys were at an MCLA tournament, your players had a lot of funky haircuts. Is that are we going to see that again? That's a what Shoreham Wading River. What's this? West Genesee in upstate New York. They love doing that at the state championships. I got to tell you, when I played in Europe in 2012, I gave myself a mohawk because I just wanted to teach myself how to relax. I just wanted, it loosened me up. It really did. I did it for fun. People were nagging me to do it. I was happy to do it, and it really made me more relaxed and maybe even feel like I was a little bit more aggressive. Is that, are we going to see kids with old man ball cuts and, Wolverine Mohawks and general mohawk? I mean, there was some crazy, there were things that people did with a razor on your team that I didn't even know was possible.
There might be a few. Surprisingly, a lot of the guys with the long hair decided before playoffs to cut it, and some of it for, internship interviews and such. But there's still a few that I think will have something up their sleeve come tournament time.
Yeah, the internship interview thing is huge. When I played in the tournament in 2007, a lot of us on the team actually grew our hair. It was like a Samson and Delilah thing. We grew our hair long from the beginning of the season, and we weren't going to cut it until the season was over, until we got bumped from the tournament, which in that year was unfortunately in the quarterfinal round against Westminster. And surprisingly enough, I guess some of the younger guys who didn't have a lot going on in the summer, they came back with hair double as long. But I had an interview with ESPN the very next week. I got back to New York, and I would immediately hit the barbershop to clean up the frat lettuce. And unfortunately, there's just not enough Rogaine in the world to bring that back for me. But Sam, thank you so
That
much.
same thing.
All right,
So, thank
Sam.
you, Dave.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us, Sam. You have a great evening. You have a great rest. Have a great practice tomorrow, and I will see you in a few short weeks in sunny, beautiful southern Orange County, California.
Sounds great.
Inside the Foss Podcast.